the GM on ESPN 102.5 The Game. He's the GM, Floyd Reese. I'm Jared Stillman, our Fireball Hot Take Friday. So yesterday I said on this show, I did not think the Nashville Predators needed to make a trade because the fans love the idea of making trades. Have you noticed that, by the way? The fans always like signing somebody new, drafting somebody new, or trading for somebody new.
Absolutely.
Nobody's as popular as the backup quarterback, or I guess in this case, Wayne Simmonds. So everybody wants to make a trade. And I said they don't need to make a trade. And so we just had a caller that called in that said, well, now do you think the Predators need to make a trade after what you saw yesterday? This is David Poile yesterday on Darren and Donick. He does his weekly appearance on Darren and Donick. And he was kind of asked about trades and the trade deadline. And David Poile, before the game, talked about how maybe important the game was as to what he was thinking about doing.
No, I want to see how we do tonight against Winnipeg. I want to see after the game if we're feeling good about our team or we're feeling that we have some weakness. And then the second part is I really like to get healthy. And I think after the break, we should be getting really close to the guys that are out now are Salamaki and Turris. And I'm really hoping they'll be back after the break or shortly thereafter.
Now, I don't really care about Salamaki, but Turris is a big piece. But David said it right there. I want to see this game. And see how I feel after this game before assessing, you know, what they need to do with trades. So that leads us to the question. Did last night prove that in order to beat the Jets, the Predators need to make a trade? Floyd?
I don't know who you would trade that would make the difference. That's the part for me. I mean, if you could trade and bring in some superstar, 40-goal scorer, all that. Yeah, maybe, but that guy's not going to be out there. You know, I don't know who. So I don't know. You could make a trade, sure enough, but is it going to affect the outcome of a game like last night? And my response would be no, I don't think so.
Well, if you get a guy like Wayne Simmonds who can play on your first or second line, probably your second line, and is a net front bona fide presence, big body guy, I think he does make a difference. I just don't know if what you would give up is worth what
that's,
you would get.
That's it.
I mean, remember when they made the trade for Turris and everybody was downright giddy about that trade for Turris and everybody was telling us, oh, it was just a great trade. And now, like, what have you gotten out of that trade? What'd you get out of Ryan Hartman's trade? Like, you traded for Ryan Hartman. He's on your fourth line. He was scratched last year during the playoffs. The guy you added at the trade deadline for a first-round pick last year was scratched in the playoffs. Well, what's that tell you? I mean, I think they can add some size. You know, like you can go get a Cody McLeod-type player. You can go get somebody like that. You can go get some, you know, small little pieces. They added, Vernon Fiddler before they went into the playoffs. Not that he really did much 2 years ago. Like, so they've done that. But, again, what are you going to do? Adam Vingan at The Athletic writes this. The Predators should ask themselves one thing at the trade deadline. What will it take to beat the Jets? Vingan writes, on Thursday morning, Predators general manager David Poile went on a local radio station. Hey, Adam, if we're going to say where your article is, can you please say the local radio station that David Poile went on, please? Thank you. To preview their game against the Winnipeg Jets. And they went over the Poile quote. Adam writes, the Predators also learned in the playoffs that the Jets are and will continue to be the biggest roadblock in their pursuit of the Stanley Cup. That point was reinforced Thursday. One game shouldn't dictate the Predators' deadline strategy, and it won't. But as management takes stock of the roster, between now and February 25th, there should be one guiding principle. What will it take to beat the Jets? In discussing the Jets' strengths after the game, the Predators noted similarities between the teams. There's the one big difference. The Jets' top skill players, Blake Wheeler, 6'5", 225, Mark Scheifele, 6'3", 207, and Patrick Laine, 6'5", 206, are huge. And that's without mentioning Dustin Byfuglien, who's nursing an unspecified lower body injury. Their Predators' counterparts aren't small, but they don't have the same heft outside of Ryan Johansson, Matthias Ekholm, and maybe Philip Forsberg. And they go on and on and on basically about the size. And to Adam Vingan's point, I agree. I think size is the biggest difference between the two teams, especially when you look at 6'5 Wheeler, 6'5 Laine, And, you know, Forsberg, who is not small, is 6 foot one, and he looks small compared to those guys. And if Forsberg looks small compared to those guys, what does Arvidsson look like compared to those guys? So I think size is a big question. And that's the one thing that I keep wondering. Okay, where's the size going to come in? Vengen writes, it makes sense that the Predators have been connected to Flyers forward Wayne Simmonds, who fills many needs in theory anyways. Simmonds listed at 6'2", 185. So we're talking about going up against 6'5", 225, and everybody wants Wayne Simmonds, and Wayne Simmonds is 6'2", 185. I mean, it's like the one guy that tweeted me earlier today and said, the Preds need big guys like Shifley and Laine. Yeah, they do. Like, where are you going to get Shifley?
Well, that was my point before. I mean, I think, you go one way or the other when you're putting the thing together. Okay, what kind of team are you going to be? Well, we're going to be this kind of a team. And I have not seen us go after guys like that. I mean, we haven't been one of those teams that said, okay, now we're going to get really big and we're going to get, you know, really physical and we're going to, I mean, we just haven't done that. I'm not calling it right, wrong, or indifferent. I'm just saying our game plan has been different. Our focus has been different. I mean, do we even have anybody that's like 6'4"?
Yeah, you have Pekka? Johansson and Ekholm.
I mean, it's just not big for us to have. I mean, you're talking about guys that are 225 pounds. I mean, that's me at least. I mean, to me, it looks like it's an organizational philosophy. And I'm not arguing with it. I mean, heck, they've won a lot of games doing that. So more power to them. But my point is, I don't know that you can just switch that in the middle of the year. You know, all of a sudden say, oh, okay, we're gonna change now. I don't know. You can go out and you can find big guys. And you can go out and you can find heavy guys. And you can go, but can you find those guys that can skate and score and do the things that they're going to have to do for you to beat Winnipeg?
My question is, what do you have to give up? You know, again, like Patrick Maroon is a guy.
What can you give up?
That's another question. I mean, everybody would naturally point to Fiala,
yeah,
right?
I mean,
like that would be, they'd say, get rid of Fiala. Well, again, you're selling low on Fiala. So if you call saying, you know, hey, I want Wayne Simmonds, and they say, okay, what are you going to offer? You say Fiala. They're going to say Fiala and
yeah.
Because they know that's, and I don't think they're ready to give up on Fiala yet. So I don't think they're going to do that. The caller's question was, do I think they need to make a trade? No, I don't. I think they're good enough to beat the Jets as is now. Now, I'm worried for sure, but I think they're good enough as is to beat the Winnipeg Jets right now. I don't think they need to make a trade. To Floyd's point, I don't think one guy that would be traded is the difference in winning and losing. The one guy I would trade for, if it were possible, is Patrick Maroon in St. Louis. And he's on a one-year deal, 175. He is a big body, in front of the net kind of guy. But I think he's from St. Louis, and he signed a no-movement clause along with that great team-friendly contract because he doesn't want to leave. So even though they stink, you'd have to convince him to want to leave St. Louis, and I just don't care enough to waste my time worrying about what Patrick Maroon wants to
do.
Now, Patrick Maroon is the guy. If you were to say, Jared, who do you like that you think you could get? It'd be Maroon, but then they're going to want like a first-round pick and you got to convince Maroon to waive his no-trade clause. So,
and they got to hope, you got to hope they want Fiala, and you've got to, I mean, there's so many things that go into it.
So then there's, you know, Mark Stone in Ottawa, who is a name I heard the Predators were very connected to last year at the trade deadline. Do you make another move with Ottawa for somebody like that? They're going to want more picks. Do you want to give more picks to Ottawa? So to answer all of your questions, no, I don't think they need to make a trade after the Winnipeg game. But am I worried if they were to play Winnipeg today? Yes. My question is, at what cost? That's kind of the question that I have in all of this, Floyd.
Yeah, what cost? I mean, it's easy. Two things. You know, what's it going to cost you? Who are you going to do it with? You've got to go out there and find somebody that wants whatever it is you're selling and somebody that's willing to give up whatever it is you want. And just doing that, forget what the payment is, but just doing that sometimes is almost impossible. So, I mean, it's going to be they got a ways to go.
Like, would you be happy if they brought in another Ryan Hartman right now? Like, if they traded a first-round pick for another Ryan Hartman, would you be okay with it?
I mean, I don't know that it would make any difference. That's
exactly.
Me.
So yeah, then, no, same. You don't want to trade a first-round pick could develop into a franchise player.
Sure. Just the kind of guy we want. Now you got a first-round pick, you can go out and draft a 6'4", 225-pound guy or whatever it is you're looking for.
Now, there's some defensemen that kind of intrigue me, but they don't need defensemen. But, again, Patrick Maroon, that would be my guy. But you know St. Louis is going to want way more than you're going to be willing to give up. So it's either – and to me in the trading, it's either – it's no more like one pick for one piece. It's not that.
Well – and
It's got to be like a legit – like when you trade it for Johansson, it's got to be like that.
And the NHL knows where the Preds are. And they know that, hey, they're struggling with Winnipeg, and they're going to find a way to beat Winnipeg. And so if David Poile calls and says, this is David. Okay, and what else? You're going to give me and what else? So it's, the price will be exorbitant. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
All right, here time to get your calls in on the Preds. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. Did last night prove to you that the Preds need a move? That's the question. 615-737-1025. And I will say this, my theory of the day, 4-1 in Game 1, 6-2 in Game 5, 5-1 in Game 7, 5-1 last night. That ain't an accident, people. 615-737-1025. We're live from the Game National Studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. and Mount Juliet on a Fireball Hot Take Friday. Hey, again, be sure to join me at Frugal McDougal tomorrow at 701 Division Street on Saturday from 3 to 5. That's tomorrow. For your chance to win 3 to 5 p.m. tomorrow, for your chance to win a pair of tickets on the Yeehaw Brewing Company Predators bus trip to see the Preds take on the Blues in St. Louis on Saturday, February 9th, where maybe Patrick Maroon will play his last game for the Blues and then Patrick Maroon will come here. Saturday, February 9th, you must be 21 years or older to enter. I look forward to seeing all of you at Frugal McDougal tomorrow at 701 Division Street for your experience there. Jared and the GM on a Fireball Hot Take Friday. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game.
We see it from Fiala right now.
You know, I think that Kevin's trying. To be honest, we were quiet in a lot of areas, I thought, as a group tonight. I thought the Johansson line put a lot of pucks at the net, scored the goal for us, but they're clicking. We're looking for, I think, secondary scoring under that, and Kevin probably falls into that with other guys. We could use more production from underneath.
Translation, it ain't all his fault, but boy, he did have one turnover last night that led to a Winnipeg goal that was not pretty. And I have been an ardent Fiala defender, and I still stand by him. I think the potential is there. We had Crispy on the show yesterday. Crispy stands by his potential of being a young player, but some of these young players are going to have to get better because I get that you're young, but guess what? It's go time, baby. When you play the Winnipeg Jets, I don't care how old, how young, it does not affect me one iota. So the question is about making a trade. Do they need to make a trade after what we saw last night and that butt-kicking by the Jets? David Poile on the Midday Show yesterday was kind of talking to how the trade market is developing. This is what David Poile said yesterday.
I think everybody's come to realize that the sooner you get in, if you know what you want and you're willing to pay the price, then why not do it? I mean, with us, I think it's a little bit different right now. We've talked about this in the last couple of weeks. You know, we're coming off of a lot of injuries. I still think we have more to get and to give and to get healthy. I still think that we're really missing Kyle Turris and where he fits in our lineup. So, I want to be, doing my job and calling teams and seeing what's available and trying to find out the prices as I best can.
So he's looking around, but I mean, just the two clips we played from David before yesterday make it sound like he doesn't really want to make a trade.
I wouldn't think. I mean, it's forget who we're talking about. I mean, just from the trade standpoint, I don't know what we would have that they're going to be willing to put up to go out and get whoever this next guy is. that's going to make a tremendous difference in how we play Winnipeg. I just don't see any of that happening.
Well, I mean, like Colin Wilson is the kind of, you know, he's a big body forward. He's a, what kind of, you traded him for a fourth round pick because he just wasn't good enough. Those are the kind of guys that when you look to add, think more Colin Wilson as the type of guy who you're going to be bringing in here. Do you really want to bring in Colin Wilson?
Yeah, I mean, is that going to make a difference? What's that going to do for you?
Let's go to your phones. 615-737-1025. William is up next here on the team makeup of the Predators. Go ahead, William.
I was want to ask Floyd Reese, would he consider Tom Landry a football guy?
That would be a yes.
Well, the Winnipeg Jets got very lucky because they got a guy like Tom Landry as their owner. He has a blueprint, and he will not stray off that blueprint for nothing. He is a hockey guy. He actually knows hockey. He ain't, most owners in all sports are kind of, well, you do this. And he actually knows what he's looking at. So he knows how to he knows when his general manager screwed up. He knows when a scout screwed up. The Winnipeg Jets are not an accident. That is stoic. That is being a stoic planner. From the foundation, when they came from the Greaseball, Atlanta Thrashers, or whatever they was, he got them and he straightened them out.
I think the Winnipeg Jets are what they are because they got a lot of high picks because they stunk.
Yeah, but they got a scouting department. They know what they're looking for, and they don't go off the path for nothing.
Jared and Floyd could have drafted Patrick Laine number two overall.
Oh, look at the whole construction of the team, baby boy. You think that's an accident?
The Jets are good.
You think it's an accident that they're that small, that they're that big. I mean,
well, so why did they?
No
so why did they? So William, why did they sign?
No accident,
why?
Bro.
Hey, stop talking for a second. Why did they sign? Why did they sign Steve Mason to a 2-year contract
Steve
to be
who?
Their goalie last year?
Steve who?
Steve Mason.
I don't care who the goalie is, man. They got Halib. They got Halib. Whatever you, how you say his last name.
Yeah, and they didn't even like him. They didn't like him. They were trying to get rid of him.
You're sidetracking. You're trying to get somebody off the path, and I ain't falling for it.
No.
This team is
they signed a guy.
This ain't no
William,
flimsy man.
They signed a guy because they did not trust Hellebuck. He was at the last year of his deal. They were fed up with Hellebuck. They had said enough's enough, and Hellebuck went out and lost a bunch of weight, got in great shape, had a great season, and they ended up trading Steve Mason in the offseason, a 2-year, $9 million experiment that didn't work out. Every move they make isn't going to be great, and the Winnipeg Jets, in my opinion, are not some transformational hockey franchise that is playing chess to your checkers. Why are the Winnipeg Jets really good? Because the Winnipeg Jets were really bad, and they drafted some really good players like Patrick Laine and Scheifele and Ehlers and those kind of guys. What's the problem in the future for the Winnipeg Jets? The fact that they owe a lot of guys a lot of money in the future. Nikolaj Ehlers is 22 years old, and he comes with a $6 million cap hit. Blake Wheeler is a $5.8 million cap hit, and that cap number is going to go all the way to 2023, and it's just going to go. He continues to, you know, get paid the big bucks. Then some of their other guys are going to come up. Guess who comes up after this year? Patrick Laine. Floyd, you think Patrick Laine is going to want some money from the Winnipeg Jets?
I would guess.
Okay, so when you're getting kind of close to the cap, and now you got to pay Hellebuck because he had that great season, and here comes Laine, and Laine says, you know what? I want $11 million. What are you going to do there? Oh, now other guys have to go. This is the inevitability when you have a bunch of good young players at the same time as they all have to go out and get paid. And that's going to happen to the Winnipeg Jets eventually. That's why I don't think the Jets' window is that large. But at the same time, they have a great group of, they have a great group of players right now. Could their owner be a great owner? I don't know. But I don't think that the Winnipeg Jets are doing anything special other than they have a great team. Like a lot of great teams. It's like, you know, are the Penguins brilliant because they drafted Crosby, number one overall? No, everybody would have drafted Crosby. It's like saying the Cleveland Cavaliers are a great organization. Hey, they convinced LeBron James to sign there. Oh, okay. Let's go to Richard, who's up next here on the show. What's up, Richard?
Hey, Jared. Thanks for taking my call. How are you today?
Good.
Hey, you know, the Preds, they look like they're just not playing as a hockey machine like the Jets are. Watching the game last night, I kept looking for Ellis to hit score from on the top like he used to, but you know, I don't think we need to trade. I think we've got a lot of talent, but somehow we're not playing in synchronized fashion, like a machine. The Jets seem like they all played on a frozen hockey pond up in Canada when they were, you know, inch high to a grasshopper. And they just seem to know each other and where they're going. And our guys just don't seem to be playing with that fluid team machine kind of approach. And that's what worries me. And, you know, do we have time with the season, you know, at the two-third mark? Do we have time for the guys to get healthy and play as a team like they did 2 years ago? And can Ellis hit those shots from on top like he did 2 years ago? I mean, that's kind of what we need to see. You know, and I don't know if getting the bigger guys in the lineup is going to be the answer. And at this point in the season and what's out there, I don't know if that's even possible. But can the guys play like they did 2 years ago? And can they play as a unit and not so much as superstar talented individuals? Because that's kind of what I'm seeing. And I'll hang up and let you apply your brilliance to answering that.
Thanks, Richard. Floyd, do you think the magic from 2 years ago has run out? Do you think that they can ever get back to the way they played in the playoffs?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the only thing that was funny, because we had a caller earlier that called in and said that he missed who was he talking about? He named about two or three of the older guys that had just
McLeod
left.
Or no, the guy said he missed Fisher and he missed
yeah those kind of guys. I mean, if they indeed had some kind of magic that's, you know, has since left, and then maybe that would be effective. But I don't sense any of that. I mean, especially after last off season. I mean, this team is as close as any team that I've been around that you know a single thing about. I mean, they are tight with the coach, tight with the GM, tight with each other. I mean, I think they are very, very comfortable where they are. And I don't, you know, that's like yesterday. To me, it wasn't. I mean, there may have been something in the team play, and I'm not denying any of that. But to me, there was just no fire. You know, there was no inspiration to it.
I mean, Crispy basically said that on the morning show.
Yeah, nothing that, you would have never known that you were playing in a hostile environment, you know, for them at Bridgestone, against a team that is arguably as much of a rivalry as you have. I mean, so I was surprised at all that.
Brenda is up next on a Fireball Hot Take Friday. It wouldn't be a Preds show without Brenda. Go ahead, Brenda.
Thank you, Jared. It happened what I was afraid of. The caller that just called in last, he's right. I saw what he saw. There, it just wasn't a cohesive unit. The ones that were hitters 2 years ago, I don't know what the answer is. I don't know if you just didn't see that spark of energy when the Jets are big hitters. We tried, but we just couldn't do it. I don't know, Jared. I wish I had the answers. I still am behind them. I still think they can do it, but they're going to have to work as a cohesive unit.
Okay, I would say, thank you, Brenda.
Thanks, Brenda.
Brenda's that worried, now I'm worried. If Brenda's worried, I'm worried.
Brenda's one of the most optimistic callers we got.
I mean, Brenda, the Titans could be playing the All-Star team, and Brenda would think that the Titans are going to win or the Predators are going to win, and that should worry you. Here are the guys, and if I'm forgetting somebody, Ian, help me out here. Here are the guys who were there 2 years ago who aren't there now that actually contributed and mattered. Mike Fisher, James Neal, Cody McLeod, Pontus Aberg. Do you really miss any of those guys? I mean, I guess Neal. But do you really miss any of those guys that are holding you back against a team like Winnipeg?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you certainly don't miss any of them on the ice. Now, that's just me. But my question was in the locker room. You know, they were talking about playing as a team and being cohesive and all of that. But I don't sense that as any kind of problem.
More of your phones. We're right back to them next. 615-737-1025 is that phone number, 615 713-731-0025. If you want to have a premium experience at the 2019 SEC Men's Basketball Tournament, call 615-770-7800 now to secure access to suites, club seats, or the Lexus Lounge at Bridgestone Arena. That's 615-770-7800 for that. Jared and the GM on a Fireball Hot Take Friday. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Morrow, followed by Arvidsson, thrown in front of the net, off the stick of Rene to the glass on his right, and now a shot deflected around Rene from the left side, and the Jets take a 5-1 lead at 15:38.
You look at it maybe just one game, or do you look at this, you know, a game against the Jets and say they're not better than us, or how do you think?
Well, they were better than us tonight. I mean, I don't know if you paint something with one brush and that's the way it is. If that were the case, the playoff series wouldn't go seven games. But they were better than us tonight.
That was Peter Laviolette yesterday. Now, again, last year it went seven games. Preds and Winnipeg in their last 14 are 7-7. But the Preds have been on the end of some spankings. In Winnipeg, you know, when the Preds win, it's 6-5, or it's overtime, or it's 2-1. Or something like that, and really not the spankings like the Preds have been getting, especially at home, from the Winnipeg Jets. Let's go right back to your phones, as promised, on a Fireball Hot Take Friday. Ray is up next on the Predators. What's up, Ray?
Hey, what's going on, guys? This just amazes me, this knee-jerk reaction people have. I guess they look at hockey like they look at college and pro football. It's not a 16-game, 14-game season. It's 82 games. Okay, I mean, people, it's one loss. Every team in the NHL throws a stinker out there. This is not something that's unusual. They're coming off their longest road trip of the season. They're getting guys back healthy. Yeah, Winnipeg, exactly like Lobby said, Winnipeg was the better team last night. No doubt about it. But if you look at the game a little bit, you actually know hockey. If you look at the game a little bit, it was a one-goal game after the disallowed goal going into the second. After they gave up that goal, you look at Austin Watson hit a post. Arvidsson got stoned on a breakaway. They score those two goals. It's a different hockey game.
The Arvidsson on a breakaway was a humongous miss in that game. Not to say that Arvidsson has to score that, but you talk about a momentum changer. If Arvidsson scores on that breakaway, it may be an incredibly different game.
It was. And here's another thing. After you fall behind two goals past the midway point in a hockey game, you got to start playing different. You got to start pinching on D. You got to start taking some chances. And it is so hard to try to come back from two goals down when you're past the midway point against NHL talent. And well, Jared, God love you, man. You hit it on the head. Winnipeg sucked for so long. That's why they've got the talent they've got.
Yeah, I mean there's no question eventually. There. Appreciate your call.
But I think that
appreciate your call, Ray. And I would go back to the thing that he said about, you know, chasing the game. That is in the common thread and a lot of that, and Laviolette is what Laviolette does talk about, you know, and then you get to that point and you're chasing the game. But in those games where they got their butts kicked at home, 4-1, 6-2, 5-1, 5-1, in the third period, they spent that whole third period chasing the game. I mean, we see that in football sometimes. You know, well, I got to blitz now because if you don't blitz, you know,
sure.
Touchdown other team, you know, yeah. We see that in a lot of sports. And so that has certainly maybe inflated the scores of some of those Winnipeg blowouts, no doubt. But I can't just take the it's one game approach and use all the excuses that the caller did there to build into it, because I felt like yesterday being in that locker room at morning skate, they approached it and knew it was a big game.
That's the part that got me. I mean, I agree with the caller from the standpoint that, you know, everybody in the NHL is going to throw out a stinker periodically because you do have a bunch of games.
And throw it out tomorrow against Florida.
That's it. I mean, I can see that happening, but not at home against Winnipeg. That's the part that got me. You know, just about anybody else, you could say, yeah, that was a stinker, and you'd kind of go, okay, you know, let's find the next game. Maybe it was our fault. Maybe we played up the Winnipeg thing too much. Maybe it wasn't as big a deal to them as it certainly was to us. I don't know. But I mean, it was certainly, not what I expected.
Harry is up next on the Preds and Jets. What you got, Harry?
Hey, it's just like any other sport. You know, the one who makes the least mistakes is going to lose or is going to win. And that's what happened. We made too many mistakes. And I don't think you're going to revamp your whole team just for one game.
So I would agree that you don't revamp your whole team because of one game. I do think in the case especially of a team like Winnipeg where it feels inevitable that you're going to play them in the playoffs, you do revamp your team or make changes to your team to beat a certain team. You know, I do think that if there is a move to make because you think it will help you beat the Jets, then you're within your right to be able to do that. I'm not saying they should. I just, you know, I can understand them making a move to counteract the Jets. You know what play was just ridiculous last night? It didn't lead to a Winnipeg goal, but is a microcosm of the type of plays this team has made in the games that they've gotten smoked by Winnipeg.
What's that?
PK had a D-to-D pass, a very simple D-to-D pass, where he just floated just a little lazy pass out there, and Blake Wheeler took it for a breakaway and should have scored. And he didn't. Pekka stopped him. But Pekka, and I was sitting in, on the sideline or on the end zone behind the goal that Pekka was not playing in, so I could see Pekka, you know, directly. And Pekka just kind of threw his arms up at PK after the play was over. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And that was something, you know, I don't see body language like that from Pekka all the time. So that tells you how Pekka was feeling last night.
Well, I mean, Pekka's, like it or not, you know, giving up five goals. I mean, that doesn't help his cause at all.
Oh, dude, when they gave up the fifth one or maybe the fourth one, I forget which one it was, Pekka just dropped his head back like, you got to be kidding me. You know, and I don't put any blame on Pekka for last night. Let's go to Larry, who's up next here on a Fireball Hot Take Friday. What's up, Larry?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good.
I'm just calling. I've been listening to you guys. I've been listening to NHL Network on my way home from work every day. I've lived down here for about 3.5 years. I moved from near St. Louis. I'm a 40-year St. Louis Blues fan, diehard.
Cool.
I heard you talking about possibly maybe trading and looking at some players that might get you a little tougher up front. He was talking about Patrick Maroon. I would be on the phone today talking to Nash, even though I don't like to trade within my own division. I would definitely, if I'm St. Louis Blues, I would be seeing what Nashville's willing to give up if they would like. Now, I think Maroon would be a pretty good addition to Nashville just because he brings a little bit of
He's got a waive his no movement clause, though, and I don't think he's going to do that. And I don't have time to worry about Patrick Maroon wanting to waive his no movement clause.
Right. And you guys mentioned him earlier, and I just heard that. I know he has an unrestricted free agent.
He is at the end of the year. Thank you for your call, Larry. Let's go to Stuart, who's up next. What's up, Stuart?
What's up, guys? How are you doing?
Good.
Good. You know, I heard earlier you mentioned the Mike Fisher thing, and I agree with the sentiment that you can't judge everything based off of just one game. And I also read earlier today that the Predators are 9-6-1 against top 10 teams this season. So, I mean, that you know, they have a winning record against those teams. However, what the callers were talking about earlier with them not playing as a cohesive unit, I kind of agree with that as something that we've seen throughout the season whenever they're going through a rough patch. It seems like they just can't pull it together. And when you had a leader with experience like Mike Fisher, you know, I think that that was a little bit different. I think that they were able to pull it together and get out of those funks a little easier during that time. And that might have been what took them so far in the playoffs the past couple of seasons.
So then where was Mike Fisher last year in the playoffs against Winnipeg?
Well, but didn't they go to a game 7 against Winnipeg where Pekka let in a couple of goals that seemed a little soft?
I know, but how are they not on pace to do that exact same thing this year?
Because I don't really know that kind of presence is on the team right now. I mean, yeah, you know, Roman Josi's an experienced player as their captain. And
right,
their
but I'm asking experience. I'm asking you for, like, some evidence that backs that. Like, something to say, this is the drop-off. To me, if anything, they're 1-1 against Winnipeg this year. They're 7-7 in their last 14 games against them. I mean, as Darren McFarland said, and thank you for your call, Stuart, as Darren said to me today, you know, he thinks it's going 7. He thinks that when they play in the playoffs, it's going 7. Like, just matter of fact, said it to me like, yeah, it's going 7. Now, I'm not sure I totally see that for sure happening, but that was kind of his take on it. I mean, look, maybe they are missing Fisher. I don't know. But, I mean, if Fisher was so great, why didn't Fisher stop the 4-1 game 1, 6-2 game 5, 5-1 game 7? I think this is much bigger than one person on the team or not on the team or something, you know, in that regard. But I could be wrong.
Oh, I mean, there's,
you can throw out whatever theory you want right now, and
I would think it would be much more obvious than the way it is if that was an issue.
Like, if they had come out last year, the first year where we thought they weren't going to have Fisher, if they had come out last year and out of the gate just, you know, they had looked like Edmonton last year,
yeah,
then we could say, okay, whoa.
Yeah.
But they've only been the best team in the league since Fisher originally announced his retirement, and they're, you know, 4 points behind Winnipeg right now, which is, you know, a week's worth of games. Like, you know, they're fine. At least they should be, you know, kind of in that regard. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. 615-737-1025. On to football. We have not talked any football today. It is on to football. I have got to flush this Jets game. So to me, I mean, we'll circle back to it at some point, I'm sure. But whew, not a good game last night for the Predators. But we have a great weekend of conference championship football. So coming up next, what do we think about the four teams that are left? The four best teams in the NFL. I don't think anybody would disagree with that. We'll get into that coming up next. It's Jared and Floyd on a Fireball Hot Take Friday. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Playing this weekend, it's a great privilege. And we embrace it. And I'm willing to jump in here with our best competitive effort, week of preparation, and you know, be ready to go against a great football team.
I do look forward to the challenge of playing a good football team and the Patriots. So we're right in the middle of preparation and getting ourselves ready to go.
Each week you want to start fast. You know, you want to, you know, quickly take advantage of field position.
When you fall behind against such an explosive team, then they can start to dictate a lot of different looks defensively. They can speed it up or slow it down on you offensively. And they're so dangerous, you know, with their special teams and some of the things they present as well. So really, it's just a matter of falling behind and then some of those situational things that we could do a better job of.
Sean McVay, Sean Payton, Andy Reid, Bill Belichick, the four coaches that are left. When I was a senior in high school, it was 2008, and the four teams that went to the Final Four that year were Kansas, North Carolina, Memphis, and UCLA. And they were the 4-1 seeds, and that was the first time in the history of college basketball that the 4-1 seeds got to the Final Four. And everybody said, well, you know what? That just means that the four best teams are that much better than everybody else this year. They were the top four teams to begin the season. They're the top four teams at the end of the season. They're the final four teams. They're the best four teams. And so, Floyd, that's what I look at when I look at these teams. As I go, you know, we spent a whole year thinking, you know, could the Bears get into the mix a little bit? And, you know, the Bears beat the Rams and the Cowboys beat the Saints and everybody beat the Patriots, it felt like. And, you know, the Chiefs lost to the Chargers. And yet the reality is they were the four best teams the whole season. Those four teams.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any doubt. I think they've gotten, you know, just what they wanted. I'm sure the TV people are elated to get, you know, the four best teams.
I don't know. I think they would have preferred Dallas win just because it's Dallas. But
I don't know.
That's, you know, I mean, Dallas is Dallas. That's like the Yankees. You know, you only get one Dallas. But I hear what you mean about that. So rank the four teams for me. If you had to rank them from top to bottom, because, I mean, this is going to sound crazy, but of the two games, I look at the AFC game, and I think this may be one of the best games I can remember in a long time. You know, it is so intriguing, the coaching matchup, the quarterbacks, the defenses that have struggled this year, the fact that they're clearly the two best teams in the AFC, the fact they had an incredible and an entertaining, great game earlier in the season, and now they're playing in Kansas City with the greatest player who ever lived. And then I look at the NFC game, and I just think the Saints are better than the Rams. And the Saints should, if they don't screw it up like they tried to screw it up last week against Philadelphia. It'll be a good game, but the Saints should take care of the Rams. And then everybody I talk to seems to be real hot on the Rams and not so much on the Saints. So if you had to rank the four teams that are playing this week, how would you rank them and why?
Based on?
Best team.
Through the regular season?
No, just to what you've seen now, to what you think going into this game, you know, and you got to add in the coaching, you got to add in the playing, you got to add in, but yeah, personnel wise, who are the four best teams? What are they? How would you rank them?
Well, I think Kansas City would be the best team. I think these two games are very, very similar to me from this standpoint. You've got, on one hand, the old NFL, the traditional, the, you know, been together, spent time, you know, matured together, all of those kinds of things have grown up that way versus, you know, the upstarts.
So the Breeze and Belichick versus Breeze
and Sean have been together for what, 10, 12 years, whatever it is.
Only about
and
13,
Bill,
maybe?
Yeah, Bill and Tom have been together for 18 or whatever it is. I mean, they've been together forever. These other two teams, you're talking about guys that have been together, you know, a year or two. Both head coaches are really young. Quarterbacks are really young.
Well, Andy's not very young.
There have, yeah, younger. I think you're looking at, explosive, high-scoring offenses and defenses that aren't necessarily traditional defenses, but they're solid defenses based on the way the teams played. So, I mean, if I had to rank them, I think I would rank them Kansas City first. I think I would rank them probably the Rams second. I would rank New Orleans third and New England last.
So I agree with you, New England. I have New England last too. I think I have the Rams first because Donald is such a beast. And I think that – I feel like Donald doesn't get enough love, even though all anybody does is give Donald credit for being a great player. I think I would go Rams 1, Saints 2, Kansas City 3, New England 4.
Okay.
And the reason I go Saints over KC is I know the KC defense looked good last week against Indianapolis, but the KC defense has not been that good this season. The Saints defense has been good all season. Now that Sheldon Rankins is hurt, and so they got to play some younger guys in there, but I think I like the Saints defense more than I like Kansas City's defense.
Well, I don't think, to be honest, I don't think the Saints defense and I don't think Kansas City's defense are going to be much factors. I mean, I think both of those teams are going to get whatever it is they're going to get from their offense, and that the opponent's offense is going to kind of balance that out. And I think that, you know, the Rams, if they can get ahead, you know, get the ball moving that way. I see the Rams coming in and taking New Orleans and saying, okay, this is what we're going to do, boys. We're going to play man for man on your outside guys. We've got Tlaib in here now. Tlaib will take away whoever your best receiver is.
Thomas.
And we've got a pass rush up here that will knock you down. And I think they're probably going to be able to do that. And if they can do that, it's going to be a long day for New Orleans. I don't see New Orleans being able to do the opposite of that. I don't see them being able to match that. I think, consequently, it's going to be a little bit tougher, you know, for them. When it comes to Kansas City, I don't think New England will let Kansas City do what they want to do on defense, which is rush the quarterback, knock the quarterback down. I think they'll prevent that. I think that the thing that is going to be hard for New England is to stop Kansas City's offense, just what you would think. And I think Hill, the receiver, the last two times they played him, he's averaged like 150 yards a game. I mean, so they don't want to play man for man. They certainly don't want to play man for man against these guys. And yet, you know, for them to have a legitimate chance, you probably have to do that and find a way to knock the quarterback down too. That's a pretty tall order.
So this to me is a huge weekend, and we both have New England as the fourth best team left. And yet, I'm not counting New England out. Are you counting New England out?
Oh, heck no.
I'm not counting New England out. I'm not counting Brady and Belichick out. Let's take your calls on the weekend. What were you going to say, something?
Well, I think the thing that you have to understand about New Orleans and about New England is that, I mean, this is a different game. It's a different level. Everything about it escalates, everything. And they've all been there, you know, and with Kansas City and with the Rams, they haven't. I think that may become a factor at a point in time.
So let's take your call. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. Your thoughts on the games this weekend, 615-737-1025. How much do you hate it when somebody says, when you ask somebody, hey, did you go to such and such, you know, for dinner? What did you think? And they say, best meal I ever had.
I'm married to one of those.
And you don't, apparently you don't like it very much, do you?
Well, no, you just ignore it because everything is the best ever.
Okay, well, I have one of those about this AFC Championship game that I really think might be one of the biggest ever. And we'll get to that coming up next. Jared and Floyd, Jared and the GM on a Fireball Hot Take Friday. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game, and we're streaming on the Game Nashville app.